really hard.
Good morning, members. Good morning, everybody who's come out today to the meeting of the House Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. We have a quorum, and I would like to have a motion to approve the minutes of January 24th, please. Representative.
Chair, I move the minutes of January 19th be approved.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. Second to the motion. All approve. Aye.
Aye.
Here we go. Thank you very much. All right. All right. So today we will be hearing House File number 366. Representative Agbaje will be presenting. The chair moves that House File 366 be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. And give Rep. Agbaje a moment here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members.
Good morning, Representative Agbaje. I see we have a co-presenter here and would like to welcome Senator Morrison back to the House.
Welcome.
Good to see you. And then, Representative Agbaje, you have an author's amendment?
Yes, that is correct, Mr. Chair.
So, Chair would move that we move the A1 and second for that. Second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. So motion prevails. A1 is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will renew the motion that House File 366 is re-referred as amended to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Okay. So let's proceed with the presentation, Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm here today to introduce House File 366, which is known as the Reproductive Freedom Defense Act. It protects Minnesota healthcare providers, Minnesota citizens, and patients from around the country against legal attacks and criminal penalties imposed by anti-abortion extremists in other states. This bill is necessary to protect the rights and access to reproductive health care for all Minnesotans. The health care providers who offer reproductive health services and those from other states seeking care. As already stated, here with me today to present this bill is Senator Morrison, who is the lead author of the bill in the Senate. In our respective professions, me as a lawyer and Senator Morrison as a doctor, we wanted to come to you together today to express why this bill is so important to protect our rule of law and to protect health care for those who provide it and receive it. The overturning of Roe v. Wade has led to a flood of harmful laws attacking not only abortion rights, but also individual liberties and privacy more broadly. States like Texas, Georgia, Arkansas, Mississippi, Missouri, and Alabama have passed or introduced laws that criminalize abortion with penalties that can include fines, imprisonment, and or the revocation of medical licenses for the abortion provider. It is deeply troubling to see laws passed whose sole purpose is to punish people who perform reproductive health care. So I'm glad to carry this bill where we can say that we are creating strong protections for Minnesota's own health care providers and citizens against legal attacks and criminal penalties imposed by anti-abortion extremists in other states. This legislation would prevent Minnesota's courts and institutions from being hijacked and abused in the service of a harmful agenda from those outside of Minnesota. House File 366 in the sections pertaining to this committee ensures that the law governing the release of health records excludes out-of-state subpoenas and court orders for records when it is in relation to laws from other states that either restrict or punish the provision, receipt, or attempted provision or receipt of reproductive health care services to a patient. This ensures that disclosure laws cannot be weaponized for other states' prosecution of health care that is protected under Minnesota law. This bill also protects physicians, physicians' assistants, and nurses from disciplinary action and or not receiving a license solely because they may be coming from another state that has extreme anti-abortion laws targeting healthcare providers. Further, the bill protects Minnesotans from laws encouraging citizens to sue individuals for providing or helping someone obtain abortion care and allows anyone sued in another state under one of these laws to countersue in Minnesota to recover any costs affiliated with that case. It also ensures that Minnesota courts will not enforce out-of-state judgments for these types of lawsuits. So now I will turn it to Senator Morrison, who can describe the importance of such protection to healthcare providers in Minnesota and those who may be coming from other states or treating patients from other states.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to present the Reproductive Freedom Defense Act with Representative Begbaje. She explained the bill perfectly. I just want to add a few comments about what this bill means for patients and providers. I've been a practicing OBGYN for more than 20 years, and over that time, I've experienced a lot with my patients. I've had the privilege of being present for some of their best and most hopeful days, and some of their darkest and most difficult. Obstetrics and gynecology is a challenging profession. You know, people often say to me, "You're an OB, you deliver babies, what a fun job." And when everything goes as planned, it is wonderful and miraculous. But pregnancy can be complicated. Sometimes people want or need to end a pregnancy for a myriad of reasons. I'm proud that in Minnesota, we are protecting people's ability to make their own private, autonomous, reproductive health care decisions. But that is not true in all of the United States. Since the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade with the Dobbs decision, states across the country, including all of the states that surround us, have either banned or severely limited access to abortion care. And since abortion care is an essential part of reproductive health care, people will seek care where it is available. So we're already seeing more patients from out of state seeking care here in Minnesota. We know that when states pass abortion bans, the burden is on patients who need access to essential time-sensitive care, and the burden is on providers and clinics in neighboring states who take care of those patients. Patients deserve privacy, and no one should have their medical history used against them in a lawsuit or legal enforcement. And patients deserve community support from their network when seeking care. So we must protect those who assist patients in accessing the abortion care they need. It's the job of healthcare providers to use their medical expertise to care for their patients. We know and follow the law and regulations in our own state, but we aren't lawyers and shouldn't be expected to follow radical and extreme legislation that other states are passing. In addition to the protections that Representative Agbaje mentioned, our bill also ensures that doctors and nurses that come to Minnesota to practice are not penalized by our Board of Medical Practice for convictions in other states who have implemented restrictive reproductive health care laws. Our bill also excludes reproductive health care related charges from Minnesota's Extradition Act so that Minnesota will not deliver a person charged with the crime of providing abortion or other reproductive care to another state under an extradition order. We simply cannot allow other states' dystopian and draconian laws to harm people here in Minnesota. It also protects people from being arrested in Minnesota under other states' restrictive reproductive health care laws. This bill is critically important to me and to my patients and to my colleagues and their patients here in Minnesota and across the country. Thank you very much for your consideration today.
Thank you, Senator Morrison and Representative Agbaje, for the presentation of the bill. We will move to testifiers if you're ready for that.
Yes.
First up would be Dr. Joseph Nelson. And Dr. Nelson, if you could just introduce yourself when you take the chair.
Hello, good morning. My name is Dr. Joe Nelson. I'm a family physician here in the Twin Cities area, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this bill. Until recently, I lived and practiced in Texas. And as part of my job there, I did provide abortion care to patients. I'd love to talk to you a little bit about what that was like and about my reasons for coming here to Minnesota for, you know, safety.
Dr. Nelson, could you just speak a little closer to the mic? That would be helpful.
Yes, I'm so sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
So, you know, privacy is an incredibly important part of the doctor-patient relationship. I routinely have patients tell me things that they have never told anyone before. And that trust is a very, very heavy responsibility for us to bear as their physician. The only thing that I can do when a patient is in crisis is do all I can to help that person sitting in front of me. And when that patient needs abortion care, I have been able to offer that care to many people and have seen a variety of different reasons behind that reason and that decision. Patients from all different backgrounds and political spectrums come to seek medical care from me. In Texas, many laws made that very difficult recently, including laws that potentially put me at risk of receiving lawsuits just for providing care. I went into work every day knowing that today might be the day I could go home to a lawsuit and have to deal with all of the difficulties that would ensue. And that would follow me for the rest of my career. But when I met people who needed my help, it just didn't feel right to leave. And there were many doctors who stopped providing abortion care in light of these laws. And then ultimately, with the Dobbs decision, I also had to stop completely. And turning patients away who were in crisis and needed my help was the worst thing I've ever experienced professionally. And so, in the middle of winter, I came to Minnesota to continue being able to provide that care to my patients. And I have been very fortunate to be able to keep seeing patients from Texas here. But I also know that there are providers even here in Minnesota who are hesitant to care for patients from extreme states like Texas and have even turned patients away. And, you know, I wanted to come here today mostly to say thank you to the authors of this bill, to say thank you to people who've supported and helped to kind of bring it forward. It feels good to have people actually rooting for me in my government instead of trying to attack me. And it will be so helpful to know that I won't be forced to betray my patients' trust moving forward if this bill passes. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Nelson, for being here, and thank you for the testimony today. Next, we will hear from Angelica Perez. Welcome to the committee. Could you please state your name for the record, please?
Yes. Hello. I am Angelica Perez, and I am here today to provide testimony in support of House File 366. So I am a technical assistance professional working with independent abortion care providers through my job at Abortion Care Network. We are a national membership organization of independent abortion care clinics and their allies. However, I call Minnesota my home. And that's what brings me here today to speak with you, members of the committee. So Minnesota has a strong network of independent clinics. Independent providers like Red River Women's Clinic in Moorhead, We Clinic in Duluth, and in the metro area, we have Robbinsdale Clinic and Whole Women's Health in Bloomington. There's also Just the Pill, a virtual and mobile provider that travels to rural Minnesota. Together, these providers create an ecosystem that ensures all Minnesotans can access abortion care. And now, they're serving hundreds, serving people that are traveling hundreds and even thousands of miles to get the care they urgently need. And we need to protect these providers by passing House File 366. Before Roe fell this summer, Minnesota's providers have had a long history of providing care to people from our neighboring states. These states have always had restrictive care, restrictive state laws for abortion access. States just to the west of us, South Dakota, and to the east of us in Wisconsin. This is a fact backed by the Guttmacher Institute that found even before Roe fell, 1 in 10 people traveled outside of their state for abortion care. Only now our state is seeing patients from what we call banned states or restrictive states. The hashtag We Count, a study from the Society of Family Planning on the number of abortions provided since Roe fell, found there was a 24% increase in abortions in Minnesota from July through August of last year. In my visits throughout the country providing technical assistance, every provider I have seen states that they have seen patients from a state they never thought they would and could provide care 24 hours a day and not meet the demand for care. That's why it's crucial right now that we protect patients and providers in Minnesota and those coming to Minnesota seeking care from attacks enabled by the Supreme Court. So please pass HF 366. Thank you for your
time. Thank you very much, Ms. Perez, for being here and for your testimony today. Next testifier would be Jess Braverman. Would you please state your name for the record, please?
Sure. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jess Braverman, and I'm the legal director of Gender Justice, a legal and policy advocacy nonprofit dedicated to advancing gender equity through the law. I'm here today to support HF 366, the Reproductive Freedom Defense Act. We are deeply concerned about the impacts of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, and the attack on abortion rights, individual liberties, and privacy around the country. Many of these laws seek not only to ban abortion in their own states, but also to reach across state lines, preventing people from traveling elsewhere to get the care that they cannot get at home, and punishing those who provide abortion care and those who help people get it. The goal of these laws is to scare providers and patients and ultimately stop all abortions wherever they occur. Our state has the responsibility to protect Minnesotans from the extreme abortion laws of other states and protect all who travel here to seek care. The Reproductive Freedom Defense Act creates strong protections for Minnesota's own health care providers and others who help people get reproductive health care against attacks and criminal penalties imposed by other states. It's the job of health care providers to care for their patients. They're not lawyers. They know and follow the law and regulations in our state, but can't be expected to understand the radical and extreme legislation that other states are passing. They need to be able to provide care that is legal in our state to patients without fear of repercussions from other states' laws and overreach. To protect providers and others helping people receive abortion care, HF 366 ensures that having been disciplined or convicted in another state for providing reproductive health care that is lawful here in Minnesota is not a cause for discipline or withholding of licensure by the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice. The bill protects Minnesotans from laws encouraging citizens to sue individuals for providing or helping someone obtain abortion care that is legal in Minnesota. It protects individuals from being delivered to another state under an extradition order for providing an abortion, and protects individuals from being arrested here in Minnesota under out-of-state laws related to abortion care. The RFDA protects our rights, privacy and dignity. There is strong support for these laws amongst Minnesota voters. In fact, 3/4 of Minnesota voters want to see abortion providers protected against legal action against them by other states that have banned abortion. And 74% support protections from out of for people traveling from out of state to get abortion care here in Minnesota. It's crucial to act now to protect patients and providers in Minnesota and those coming to Minnesota seeking care from the attacks enabled by the Supreme Court decision. I urge you to pass HF 366. Thank you very much.
Jess Braverman, thank you very much for the testimony. Committee thanks you. We can move to public testimony. I don't have any on the docket, but if there is anybody who would like to speak on this bill, now would be the time. Seeing none, we do not have any amendments filed, so we can move to member questions and comments. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the bill and the write-up, I'm trying to get some clarity because too often we generalize and don't cover all the outlying things. And in the write-up, it indicates was convicted in another jurisdiction of a felony for providing reproductive health care services that are lawful in Minnesota. Now, providing services, but in the activity of providing services, if there is a error or malpractice, then they can be convicted of a felony for that while providing those services. I'd like to have some clarity that we have, we don't give an out to someone from another state that's been convicted of malpractice while providing these specific services in another state.
Representative Ogbaje, would you like to respond to that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Quam, for the question. That's actually a really good question to clarify. So in this bill, it is very specific only to states that have restrictive laws on abortion. So if the issue is solely just because the provider was providing an abortion, those types of claims would not be able to be heard in Minnesota. If there is a claim specific to malpractice, malpractice is still going to be malpractice. And so those are covered under different laws in Minnesota. As a former malpractice litigator, I'm pretty familiar with them. And so if we do have a case of a physician or a provider who is actually doing something wrong in their care of medical services, those cases can still be brought.
Thank you, Representative Ogbaje. Follow-up?
Representative Quam? Mr. Chair, to that, this is not just, part of the bill is things happening in Minnesota. Other part is repercussions of license activities outside the state of Minnesota and how we would treat that. And the response I heard did not give clarity that we don't have. A good example is we had some very good human trafficking laws passed. Representative Pinto and many current members were involved in that activity. But because of some specific verbiage, a judge determined that that whole section was thrown out, and we had to quickly take care of that issue. I would like to avoid a possibility in this language that might give a loophole so a bad actor from another state doesn't come in just because their malpractice or their conviction, loss of license, happened because of something during one of these processes that we're saying more of a blanket, we're going to ignore related things to that. And so that's why I'm trying to get clarity on specific language, because generalizations in law cause problems in the courts. And that's why unintended consequences or holes in the language should be addressed. And so you know, the combination of the language and the notes the committee were provided doesn't leave me with a comfort feeling, you know, that we don't have an unintended consequence. There's a lot of issues with cross-state practicing of medicine. We have multiple entities within our state that practice and have facilities in multiple states. I'm not sure if there's, I think there's been some activity with interstate commerce with services and how that might bleed over. So, you know, unless there's, it'd be nice if we knew about any specific cases that would relate to this type of cross-state licensing, cross-state services and things. It'd be nice to have that warm fuzzy that we don't have to worry about it. But you see where I'm going with this. That's why I'm looking for more clarity.
Representative Baum, I definitely see where you're going with it. With the law, there's always questions and concerns, and that's why we have the court system. Representative Agbaje, would you like to comment further on this concern of Representative Kwam?
Sure, Mr. Chair and Representative Kwam. So what we have in the language, as you'll see, I can point you to lines 2.12 and 2.13 and 2.14. Basically, if a physician has a license and they are doing reproductive health care in a manner that's lawful in this state. So as long as they're licensed to do it in Minnesota, they're licensed in their home state, they're doing reproductive services care in the appropriate way, in the licensed way, that's what covers them. But for someone who is, you know, has tort action against them or has contract action against them because they did something wrong in their medical procedures, that qualifies then as a tort case, and that would qualify them for a medical malpractice case. So those types of cases are not the ones that would be covered, but it would just solely be someone who was licensed, who handled reproductive care correctly, but because they're coming from a state where reproductive care in general is being targeted, that's who would be covered by HF 36.
Thank you, Representative Agbaje.
Mr. Chair, some of the language I was looking at also included 3.12 through 3.19, and it gets a little bit more muddied when you're talking about nurses, advanced nurse practitioners, and et cetera. So, again, we might have real good focus on a specific thing, but it's a little bit broader in the language, and that's why I think we need to be careful, because currently, if someone loses a license in another state, if they're working in a facility and they have a patient that's calling them from another state, then there are some, you know, complications to that. I know the Mayo Clinic, with their nursing staff, because they see a lot of people outside the state, have to have extra precautions that they aren't breaking the law by giving care to someone in another state that they specifically aren't licensed in. And so, because this is a little more complex than a lot of areas, I still am not comfortable with the full clarity of the language. Offline, I can maybe get more comfort from additional information, but I'm just trying to give you an idea where I'm coming from. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kwam. Good questions and good answers by Representative Agbaje. Thank you. And next, Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to comment, and the author of the bill, Representative Agbaje, clarified a claim for malpractice is a tort. It's a civil matter. It's not a criminal matter. I'm not aware that there are just criminal malpractice for medical malpractice. I just wanted to point that out to the good representative.
Thank you, Representative Carroll.
Mr. Chair, since I would let the other member know that in bullet 4, page 2 of the brief that was presented to us, It is referring to a felony, and therefore that would, when we're looking at things that applies to felonies, I believe that does stretch over to that other tort area of life. I'm referring to some of the briefing information that is in this form that I think everybody has. And that's why I was asking for clarity. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Carroll?
If I could, I think that's referring to where in a state that they do make it a felony. But generally, medical malpractice is a tort, which is a civil matter. Just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, we aren't specifically limiting to a state. I think this is covering all states. Therefore, I'm not sure if that statement is globally accurate. I'm not sure it's not globally accurate, but we shouldn't be making determinations if we don't have the clarity before us.
Thank you, Representative Quam. House Research, any comment on this issue as far as your thoughts on where this would stand from the conversation we've had here today?
Mr. Chair and members, I'd say that sections 2, 3, and 4 of the bill limit the ability of boards to discipline the professionals that they regulate in circumstances in which they might have been convicted of a crime in another state, but the conduct is lawful in Minnesota.
Okay. We have another question from Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Agbaji, and I'm not sure the answer to this, so hopefully you are familiar. I'm looking at lines 2.8 to 2.11, and I only ask this because I have a family member who had an experience during COVID on interstate telehealth. Mm-hmm. And so currently, are physicians licensed to do interstate telehealth, or would this be a new ability for physicians?
Thank you, Representative Brindley. Proceed, Representative Bajay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative New Brindley, for that question. I actually need to get clarity on that. I don't know if House Research might have a little bit more clarity, so I'll defer to them on that.
Sure. Ms. Clarfus?
Mr. Chair and Representative New Brindley, the Board of Medical Practice issues a registration to practice interstate telemedicine to physicians from other states who want to practice telemedicine to Minnesota patients. So that's the reference to registration. That's in the existing Board of Medical Practice statutes already.
Thank you, Ms. Clarkos.
Mr. Chair, we also have the director of the Board of Medical Practice here.
Would you please introduce yourself to the committee, please?
Mr. Chair, members, thanks very much. I'm Ruth Martinez. I'm the executive director of the Board of Medical Practice. Happy to answer any questions.
Representative New Brindley, you want to restate the question to Ms. Martinez?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. In the bill language in lines 2.8 to 2.11, where it's referencing physicians specifically, it says that the board shall not refuse to grant registration to a physician to perform interstate telehealth services. And so maybe my question to you would be just a little bit more broad. How does that function in Minnesota now? So clearly there are, it sounds like, some allowable interstate telehealth services. And can you just tell us a little bit about that and how that plays out?
Mr. Chair?
Please proceed.
Representative, thanks for the question. Yes, let me just explain a little bit about the telehealth registration in Minnesota. Physicians who are actively licensed in good standing in another state may register to provide telemedicine services in Minnesota. I want to be very clear that the telemedicine legislation in states is variable, and so we really have to focus on what our law is. It's fairly permissive for people to treat patients in Minnesota when they have that registration. Anyone with a full license in Minnesota can provide the whole breadth of medical practice, and we do have a couple of exceptions in the telehealth section of our statute that allow some intermittent care without registration or full licensure in Minnesota for exceptional circumstances. But essentially, if someone is licensed in good standing and registered in Minnesota as a telemedicine provider, they may treat patients in Minnesota. Did I cover the question?
Thank you, Ms. Martinez. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then what this would be, and just to clarify then, what this would indicate is that a physician in another, who might be residing in another state, who is in good standing in Minnesota, would have those privileges.
Mr. Chair,
could not be denied.
Ms. Martinez.
Representative Brindley, they would have to be in good standing in the state in which they are actively licensed and registered in Minnesota as a telemedicine provider. So the license that they hold in order to register as a telemedicine physician is the license in another state. So it's a full and active license in good standing in the state in which they reside or are licensed. If that clarifies, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that clarification, although I think that perhaps then this section could put physicians in another state in a precarious situation in their own states, it sounds like, which is concerning. I will just say more broadly, you know, as most of the bills we see, I think there's some really good stuff in this legislation, some stuff that's concerning. I mean, for example, Section 1, I certainly agree with. I would certainly agree with Section 1. Other states should not be able to prosecute things that happen within Minnesota. That should fall under our laws and our jurisdiction. So certainly, I would agree with that. I think that there is some other stuff that is a little bit concerning, you know, the interstate telehealth that we just talked about. But also just this concept more broadly, I think that there is perhaps a dangerous precedent to consider that if anyone, not just physicians, but if anyone has been convicted of a felony in another state, we certainly should be very cautious. And it's not necessarily because of what the felony was for. It's the willingness to do so should give us pause. In how then we treat those folks when they get to Minnesota. I think that is definitely concerning as we go down the road. Interestingly, Section 6 is, I know that I'm sure that will have a much bigger discussion in the Judiciary Committee, but it's incredibly unusual. In fact, that language, I'm not sure that exists anywhere else in law. And then last, I would just suggest under Section 7, a little bit of concern here, you know, regarding things that take place in Minnesota and then no potential liability for those things. And I would specifically reference, you know, the bill that we passed last week. I know it has not been signed by the governor yet. May not be, but if it were, you know, there could be a situation where, again, I'll use the example that I used the other night. I mean, a 13-year-old girl could come to Minnesota, and there would now be a fundamental right for that 13-year-old girl to come here to be sterilized, and as a fundamental right, she can't be denied that. A physician would have to do that for her. However, I would assume that in a home state, there potentially could be action brought for the treatment of a 13-year-old girl, for a young child. I just think that this language particularly, especially the including but not limited to, makes it incredibly broad. And I think that when we use language like that, we are opening ourselves up for situations that I'm confident you don't intend, Representative Agbaje, which I appreciate. I'm confident that you would not intend situations like that, but when we use language like including but not limited to, that opens up us up for a very broad range of incidents that that could be problematic for us.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Any comments, or I have another.
Mr. Chair, I'll just briefly state, and thank you, Representative New Brindley, for bringing up all of those questions and concerns. I really appreciate it. I'm glad that we do find some common ground on the fact that, you know, what happens in Minnesota should be dealt with in Minnesota. I think that's a really good starting point. You know, I do hear the desire to have this be very specific to reproductive care, about what happens with physicians and care providers here and those coming from other states. I think, you know, this bill still has another stop, but, you know, we'll be continuing to look at the language, how to continue to make it tighter, make sure that we're very specific to protecting physicians, physicians assistants, nurses, healthcare providers who are providing reproductive care and who are providing reproductive care correctly, and that they aren't targeted by other states. And so to the extent that we can get language that continues to clarify that, we'll keep looking at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Agbaje. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Bierman, and I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Agbaje for bringing this bill forward. We are charting new territory here, and you know, we, even in our state where abortions are legal, I used to have one of the few Planned Parenthoods in my district. It's been redistricted out since then, but I have often watched what our doctors are subjected to here within our state where it is legal. We have visited abortion clinics and seen an increase of out-of-state individuals seeking care and seeking abortion health care, and seen an increase of those as well. And that if in a state where doctors are already treated hostile and poorly, where it is legal, we want to make sure that we protect our doctors here are performing and working with patients from out of state. So really, thank you so much for being willing to take on this task and putting forward legislation that is very new, that states are just exploring now about how do we protect our health care providers. So I just wanted to say thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at the summary also, and it, you know, talks about this section of patients' health care records cannot be released without consent from the patient. Are there any restrictions for the patient to access or share the records?
Representative Agbaje.
I believe that, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. I believe that would qualify as patient consent if they have their own records that they wish to share with someone else. But this is really just prohibiting subpoenas from states that, you know, restrict abortion, restrict reproductive health care rights, that they cannot come to Minnesota seeking those records without the consent and permission of the patient.
Representative Murphy.
Do you know if there's any records that a patient does not have access to, or there's certain records that, for whatever reason, they don't have access to?
Representative Agbaje.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I guess I'm not quite following the line of questioning. If a patient, most patients do have access to their medical records, whether through a portal or by requesting it from their doctors. So if a patient wants their own medical records, they are usually, in most cases, able to receive them.
Thank you, Representative Agbaje. Further questions?
Yeah. Just as a follow-up, I had talked with a person that had an abortion over the summer, and they had asked just to be able to see the aborted baby after the procedure, and that wasn't something that they were allowed to do. And I was just curious if that's part of that healthcare record, if they should have been able to see it.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. To me, that doesn't sound like an issue about healthcare records. Usually it's like the record of the procedure that happened and medication that was provided. I'm sorry that happened to someone that you know, but this law is really just looking at, you know, the records that we have, the paper records, any visual records or any screens or scans. Those are the types of things that a patient would need to consent to before an outside third party could receive them.
Thank you, Representative Agbaje. Further questions, Representative Murphy?
No, thank you.
All right. Next, Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to talk about this bill at all, but one, there's something that's, because I do find areas in here that that I agree with, you know, and so I think from that standpoint, moving it forward, and I recognize that we're also limited to sections 1 through 4 in here, and but there's one thing that just keeps coming up, and I just need to ask, and I understand that the focus here is reproductive care, and I understand that that there's a lot of people here and in support of this bill who are beyond able to comprehend another state that wouldn't believe what we believe. That being said, the thing that is I'm wondering about is, why don't we trust the board to make appropriate decisions? Why are we limiting? I mean, the scope of practice for doctors and nurses and is massive. It's far beyond just reproductive care. We're going to trust the board to make those disciplinary decisions, those licensure decisions, in other aspects. You're intending to carve this out and say, you know what, in this area, we're going to restrict the board from making a full investigation and making a determination on licensure or disciplinary action. And if I have that wrong, please tell me. I feel like that's what we're trying to do, to move, maybe to move the needle further, faster, and that might be important. I mean, and I wouldn't disagree with that possibly, but I'm wondering why we're not trusting the board to make a decision on their own in this matter. Why we're restricting the board? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nadeau. You know, the purpose of this bill is really to ensure that those who practice in Minnesota, who have received a license in Minnesota, or are registered to practice in Minnesota, that they can move forward with the reproductive health care that they know how to do. And so we want to be sure that they're protected in Minnesota, especially if they might be coming from another state that, as you said, doesn't have the same laws around reproductive health care that we do. And we've written this bill in a way that it's tailored to only address whenever there are, you know, whenever really there's like a conflict of laws in the reproductive health care space. It's not about how, you know, again, if a medical provider is doing something wrong and they have torts against them, that's separate. That's handled separately. That's different. There's no get out of jail free card here. But if it's an issue that you have someone who's a licensed healthcare provider is providing reproductive health care, but they're coming from a state that restricts that, we want to be sure that they're protected here in Minnesota so they can still provide that reproductive health care to their patients.
Thank you, Representative Agbaje. Follow-up? Representative Nadeau?
Yes, quickly. And I think I understand that, mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. But it doesn't answer the question for me that why are we carving it out? So let's just say there's a state and they have, you know, they provide euthanasia, and that, you know, that doctor comes here and wants to be licensed here. It just seems to me that the board would not make those decisions in a random and haphazard way. I think they would take those things into account. And maybe it's just a disagreement at this point, and I'm gonna stop because I didn't intend to speak to it. I just feel like we need to trust those boards to make those decisions. I mean, I heard last week that, you know, there shouldn't be politicians standing over the shoulders of a doctor. I heard it 14 times, and here we are. Politicians are stepping in here and saying, you know what? You guys decide what you want to decide, but when it comes to this issue right here, we're going to help predetermine how you're going to discipline licensed professionals in this industry and when you're not. So I guess that's it. That was my comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for bringing the bill. I appreciate the discussion. And like I say, there are things in here that I think are super important. I think maybe all of it is. But I appreciate you having a dialogue with me.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Any comments you would like to make on that, Representative Agbaje, before I move on?
I think, Mr. Chair, I'll just say that, you know, this doesn't take away a board's ability to pursue disciplinary action when there's a tort. But all this is doing is that if the only reason someone has been disciplined is because they've provided the appropriate reproductive health care, then that's something that needs to be protected in this state.
Thank you, Representative Agbaje. Representative Perryman.
This is kind of on what Representative Doe started about, but I'm envisioning how we keep saying other states. So Minnesota's here, and then we have several other states around us, and of course all our laws and statutes are different. So I'm going to ask more of a specific question, which is, should a doctor be in a malpractice suit in another jurisdiction, and his or her license is taken, or action is taken against them in that jurisdiction, how would this bill interact with the doctor's ability to become licensed in Minnesota? So malpractice in another state comes over here. What would be the process, or how can they get licensed here in Minnesota?
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. Again, the question you'd have to look at what the malpractice was for. So again, like, this is only to protect healthcare providers who are providing reproductive health care. They're licensed to do so. They are coming from a state that has restrictive reproductive care laws, and they've restricted that, and so they are targeting doctors and medical providers who provide that type of care. If you do have a malpractice tort that is separate, that is not covered under this, because malpractice is still malpractice. This is only protecting people who are providing reproductive health care and are licensed to do so.
Thank you.
No further questions?
No, okay. No, thank you, Chair.
Representative Breyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Agbaje. I just want to thank you for bringing this bill. One of the things that we've heard throughout this debate for months now is the risk that this poses to providers. We heard about that vividly today, in fact. And to me, the value of this bill is that we're seeing an effort in other states to criminalize health care, to criminalize a specific kind of health care. And in Minnesota, we don't accept that those types of medical practice should be criminalized. So I think it's very important, both in a practical sense, to make sure that our providers have the guardrails up that will keep them safe legally. And also, I think it sends an important message that we have providers' backs in Minnesota. We all depend on our medical practitioners to keep us well, to keep us healthy, to take care of us when we're sick, to take care of us when we need care. And as we've seen, providers will leave. They will leave if we don't set up conditions where they can flourish and perform their tasks to the best of their abilities. So thank you for protecting our providers, including the physician's assistants, including the nurses, and all of those who are looking out for us.
Thank you, Representative Breyer. I don't see any other further questions, so we'll move to final comments by the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the discussion today from members. I think it's really good to, you know, go through this language and kind of bring up different issues. And, you know, I've taken some notes that we'll be taking back as we continue to move this bill. But what I really, you know, what I really want to say is that we're in a time now where Minnesota is essentially becoming an island in the upper Midwest when it comes to providing abortion and reproductive care. And it is critical that we act to protect patients and providers in Minnesota and those who are coming to our state to seek that care. We know that this is care that's necessary. It's health care. It's what is required of people who seek this out and who need this in their lives. And so we just want to make sure that, you know, Minnesota doesn't become a chill environment for healthcare providers, particularly when they might be seeing patients who may have traveled here, or maybe they come through telehealth, or maybe they're even just working to give consult to other providers that they may know. And so I really urge the committee to support this bill and help it move it along its way. And, you know, we'll continue taking feedback and doing what we can to make sure that it's very tight and strong. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Agbaje, for the presentation of the bill. At this time, the chair will renew the motion that House File 366 be re-referred as amended to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. And the chair votes aye. Well, we're just going to do a voice vote. So all those in favor of House File 366?
Aye.
Aye. All right. And the chair. Any opposed?
No.
Thank you very much for the education up here. Appreciate it. All right. We are good. And we can next meeting. Next meeting will be January 30th, and this will be the joint hearing with the Commerce and Finance Policy. Details will be posted, so check your inbox. Thank you very much, and we are adjourned.